Now, here are a few passages in Joel that we might walk past, but we dare not. So I want to read them and discuss them. Now, in this chapter, that ye may be the children, we find this passage. When we are no longer under the hypnotic influence of the opposites, then the world has no power to enslave us. This world is overcome in proportion to our giving up the belief in good and evil. But actually, there is no change in the world itself. It appears to be the same. The great difference is that we do not see it the old way anymore. For us, there's a different light on it. Now we have a different perspective, a different outlook. And the people are the same clerks in the stores, the same husband, wife, and child. Yet the whole vision changes the moment we perceive the divine nature of the soul of man. The transformation has taken place in us. Now, many of us have looked out and we find it hard to say that there is no good and no evil. And the reason is because that's not the whole story. There's a word missing. There's no good or evil matter. There's no good matter, and there's no evil matter because there is no matter. And that is why there is no good and no evil. And as you keep practicing the knowledge that there is no matter, either good or evil, you cannot have sinners and reprobates and degenerates, because then you're accepting matter. And you're only withholding from yourself the transformation in consciousness. When we see that nothing but world hypnotism brings about these varying appearances, we shall no longer fight them, but understand that no hypnotist has ever yet produced anything but a picture or an image, and that this world mesmerism has never yet created man, woman, or child, has never yet created sin or disease, but only an illusory picture to which the names of man, woman, child, sin, disease, and death have been given. Now, when you read a passage like that, you simply cannot understand it alone, because you've just been told that there is no human race. And if you understand this passage and go right through the door and do business with the human race, you might just as well not have read it. We are being told that every man, woman, and child is an illusory picture. That's what it says. We are being told by Jesus, or at least by the Christ appearing as Jesus, that all that's in this universe is the child of God. We know that mortal flesh is not the child of God. And Joel is telling us, therefore, if mortal flesh is not the child of God, and the Master has told us only the child of God is here, then mortal flesh cannot be here. And we, unable to give up the illusion of mortal flesh in our sense mind, can only come above that illusion by a transformation which takes us out of the sense mind. You must see that this coming out of the sense mind is the only way in which you can live in reality. For the sense mind is incapable of experiencing reality. There is no person on this earth who has ever seen God or the creation of God. Not one. Whenever you have seen the creation of God, it has been in your highest consciousness, which has nothing to do with your eyes or any of your other sense faculties. The only way we can experience reality is in the Christ consciousness. That means you must look at me and I must look at you, knowing that what we are looking at is an image and thought. But Christ is there. You must learn to dwell within yourself until you can know that where you appear to be, Christ is. Until you can realize that where you are, because Christ is, and your physical form is not Christ, your physical form is not there. This is the way to opening that rosebud of the soul. You see, only truth in consciousness opens the soul. And if we are afraid to face the truth, you must now discover that the only you that is afraid to face the truth is the you that isn't you. The adversary within is afraid to face the truth. The mortal mind is afraid to face the fact that its false creation is not you. That is how subtle the activity of this mind within us has been. We feel that we are afraid, but it is this mortal mind that is afraid. It isn't us. It is not our possession. It has possessed the false sense of us. Now, there are other passages that are important. You should hear again this rosebud of the soul. There is but one principle of life, whether for our own family or others, but knowing that God is the soul of all being does not mean that God is the parent of mortals. It means that all mortals, whether good or bad, eventually must die to the belief of mortality, awakening to the realization of their own identity. Everyone has a soul, not a separate soul, but the same soul, and God is that one soul. It's like a tightly closed rosebud, so tight and small as to be imperceptible to human beings. And this soul is not the body, it is the consciousness. The more it can be touched by truth, the more it unfolds as if sunlight were reaching out, opening the bud. You see, the sense mind does not open to the soul. And so the illumination we wait for never comes. There's a passage in Luke where the Master says, we have to make a change of consciousness. And he says it in the 17th chapter of Luke, in which he refers to Lot's wife. He tells us to remember Lot's wife, what happened to her. And he has a reason for talking to us about Lot's wife. It is this. So it was in the days of Noe, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage, until the day that Noe entered into the ark, the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, also as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, and they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Let's remember that day when the Son of Man is revealed. For in that day, he which shall be upon the housetop and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. He that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife. Now the day in which the Son of Man is revealed is the same day that Peter is talking about when he speaks of the end of the world. It is called the consummation of the age. In that day, he which shall be upon the housetop means he who is in a high consciousness. He who has reached the level called transformation of consciousness. Let him not come down. Remember Lot's wife. All of the Bible is taking us out of the material consciousness, which is limited and which is using up its substance, living by matter or bread alone. And as we rise in consciousness, we come into a land where there is an unlimited substance. That is the hidden manna. And when we are in the land of the hidden manna, of grace, of substance without end, of life eternal, or even approaching, we are not to come down in consciousness back into the realm of belief in matter. Way back in Genesis, that was shown when Lot received two strangers. They had been sent there by Abram, whose name had been changed to Abraham, because he was chosen of the Father. In other words, he had become aware of the Christ within. And this became his new name. And that is why his name was changed outwardly to Abraham. That was a sign of his new consciousness. Now there were three who came to Abram. And three, as you know, means the completion of the Christ consciousness. Two only came to Lot. These two angels of the Lord appeared in the street, meaning they were still an external part of his being. They had not yet entered his house, his consciousness. And these two were truth and righteousness. He was becoming aware of a new level called truth and righteousness. The third had not come. Love had not entered in. And the townspeople, when they learned that these two had come to Lot, they knocked at the door and they wanted all kinds of recriminations against these intruders who were changing Lot's consciousness. And these who knocked, this violent mob outside, this was his old consciousness rebelling against being lifted. And it is said that he shut the door upon them. As we learn that we must shut the door upon the rebellion of the old against the entrance of the new. And now Lot is saying to the angels, meaning the divine spirit within himself, "You have told me to escape to the mountain, but I can't do it. I don't think I can make it. I'll die. I can't go that far. Can't I just go to a little hill?" But eventually he does summon the courage to rise in consciousness, and he goes to the mountain called Zoar, His wife looks back. She cannot climb to this higher consciousness without covetously thinking of the wonderful things she's leaving behind. The feel of matter is too strong in her. But even Lot's wife is really another side of himself. He cannot reach the highest, for he still has this side in himself which looks back, called Lot's wife. But what happens on the plains below? There is desolation. All below is killed off. And this is the Master's meaning when he reveals to us to remember Lot's wife. When the Son of Man is revealed on earth, he says, only those will remain who have not looked back. Only those who are not on the plain, who have risen above the plain, who have risen to the hill. And this is plain enough, that if we are in the old material consciousness, we are standing on the threshold of death itself. When we have risen in consciousness, resolutely not turning back to the covetousness of the old consciousness, to the clinging, to the possessiveness, to the personal self, then all that is destroyed, which is destroyed on the plane of material consciousness, does not touch us on the level called the hill of higher consciousness, or Zohar. And so we see in Lot his struggles to attain some degree of higher consciousness, the very same struggles that we undergo in our need to shut out the fears, the doubts, the uncertainties that we're even doing the right thing by leaving all for Christ. And that is why this message today is about survival. There is only a false sense of survival when you retain your material consciousness. It is a survival that is temporary, illusory. It is a survival of a false sense of being until even that must go. But there is a true survival. And I think we should all make a mental note of the place where the Master again tells us of the true survival, which we have heard in the earlier part of this lecture. Whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it. Now you can't go any higher for that statement than directly to the mouth of the Father, who says, whoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it. And they're talking here about seeking to save your material sense of life. Seeking to save your material sense of body. You lose it. You can look out and see that our fathers lost it before us, their fathers lost it before them. And there's no one on this earth that we know who will not lose it. No matter what you do to preserve it, you cannot. There's no material way out. But he does give us the way out. And whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. And the losing of your life is the losing of your material sense of life. And that is the only way you find life. And that is why the only message that the Master brought to this earth was transformation. Paul caught it when he knew that we must be transformed by the renewing of the mind. Transformation is the way out. Transformation is survival. Transformation is life eternal. And therefore, spiritual consciousness, which is the way to transformation. Is the survival that we cannot find in science or in religion. There is no religion teaching survival through transformation. There is no science teaching survival through transformation. But there is the Christ within teaching survival through transformation. And I don't know how many thousands of years we have been on this journey, but here we are today. And it is clear. And it would appear to be ordained. For the understanding of the Father within, which makes it possible for us to see this path, is the fulfillment of His own statement to us, "Be ye perfect as your Father." Be ye transformed. Turn ye from the planes below. Turn ye from material consciousness. Rise to the hills of fire consciousness. And live in that higher consciousness, in Eden, on the earth. That seems to be the way that we may be children of the Father. And you know, it takes a lot of work. You might decide even that it takes your life work to go through your day refusing to turn your life over to a false mind and a false body and false activities. It certainly does take all you've got. But any other way is being Lot's wife. Because we've certainly come to that place where any other way is going down, looking back. "Be salted," he said to his disciples. "Be ye Christed." There can't be two of you. If Son of God is your name, any other identity is a masquerade. Any other identity is wasting time seeking survival. The suggestion I'd like to make now is that when you get home, you jot down those few words that were recommended to you just before the intermission. Speak only to God. Anything else you speak to is a mirage. If you're talking to a dog, or a tree, or a bird, or a flower, or a person, Don't be fooled. Only God is there. Speak only to God. Now, how you work this out with yourself will be very interesting and illuminating. And to the degree that you find a way to speak only to God, you will discover the new birth taking place in you. This will be the sunlight of truth, opening your own soul buds. This will be your acceptance of the all-presence of the Father everywhere, regardless of the appearance that meets your physical eye. You cannot insult God. You cannot be angry with God. You cannot cheat God. You cannot lie to God. You see, if we can do these things, we have accepted other than God being there. You'll find it a beautiful safety valve, and you'll find it a marvelous way to practice the presence of the Father. It will help you obey the two commandments, and most of all, it will enable you to walk in the path of invisible perfection everywhere. The passage that we have discussed today was this. Ye have heard it been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them and curse that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. If you speak only to God, you will fulfill that passage and more. And if you do not speak only to God, it will be because something in you has stepped aside and permitted a false identity to take control. And that false identity which takes control will be the Antichrist parading as you. Now, in carrying this out, you might benefit by this further suggestion. There has been much inability to meditate properly. And that will continue until you develop the capacity to contemplate properly. We have wanted to plant seeds without first tilling the soil. The contemplation is the preparation of the soil. Contemplation is a glorious luxury. It's a way of being still with no personal objectives, no seeking to triumph or attain or fulfill an ambition. It is merely resting quietly within yourself, patiently, being willing to even seem to struggle for 5 or 10 minutes with nothing happening, feeling a sense of, oh, I'm wasting my time. I'm frustrated. Nothing's happening in there. Being willing to go through those 10 minutes. Let those be your first fruits. Until you begin to feel that there is something happening. It's worth all the time you gave it. Until you can rest there happily and quietly, not even concerned whether anything is happening, just to be there, alone, resting, alive and alert, at peace, providing a soil until something seems to catch hold. Now all of the subtle activity that was static, where is it gone? It's because you were patient enough to outwait it. You were meeting that mortal mind on its own home ground and saying, I can stay here as long as you can. You'll be the first to leave, not me. And as you overcome in that clash, and the mortal mind finally resolves itself and gives you this moment of peace, it's as if you felt a root taking a new depth within you. You're beginning to like this silence. It begins to suggest a sense of power. Power to just remain there in spite of all the buffeting of the mortal mind. Let it buffet. I'm going to remain here. You see, I've got to win, or else I'm lost. And finally, I know I'm winning, because I feel a peace. I feel no opposition. There's nobody now trying to pry open my mind and pour thoughts into it. I've got a sort of a vacuum going. Now I can contemplate. And so I take something to contemplate into this vacuum. I'm not trying to meditate, I'm contemplating. I'm contemplating truth. All people are images, I read in Joel's book. I want to contemplate that. My own mother, an image? My father? Sister, brother, wife? Child? Well, yes, he did say, leave mother, brother, father, sister for my sake. Why? Images. What about me? Image too. Hard saying. Yes, that's why we're contemplating it. To get inside where we can begin to understand what is being revealed. And then in this contemplation, you're not the thinker. The thoughts are just coming now into the vacuum, explaining reality. You are learning from the infinite. You are letting it seep into your consciousness. You're not reaching out for it. That's why you built the vacuum. And you just wait there. And your teacher begins to bring to the level of your need every thought that you require. Now these are little children, these thoughts. And the Master says, suffer these little children to come unto me. These are the little children, the little impulses, the angels that come in your quiet time. As you till the soil into a vacuum, not thinking but waiting, abiding. Maybe chewing one little thought of truth and then abandoning it so that the invisible consciousness of the Father can come through and explain that truth. I am the divine image, it says. Imperishable, indestructible. I'm not a temporary human image. I never was. I'm willing to be the divine image, and that's an image. Why should I be willing to be an image that is perishable? And then the Father says, only my divine image has all my qualities. You are that divine image. And all my qualities are where you are. Take off your five-sense mind. Let go. Accept. Turn. Reconcile. Live in Eden consciously. And then you rest there. And after a while, you're conscious of the flow of a seeming light, of a mist, many things. But you're conscious of inner activity. And now you discover you haven't tried to at all, but this is meditation. The doorway was contemplation. And when that doorway opened, you found yourself in his silence. Now the government is on his shoulders, not yours. You rest, you wait. Abide in me. Let me abide in you. You will bear fruit richly. There's nothing for you to do now. It is the function of spirit to be itself. And you are serving the spirit through your silence. The world doesn't have to change now in your silence. You don't have to see Gabriel. You don't have to hear a voice. You don't have to see the streets paved with gold. You have to be in the quietness until the peace comes upon you. Until the Spirit baptizes you. And every moment that this is done is a lifting of the veil, a regeneration, a renewal. This is the repentance. This is the change of consciousness. This is where you become white as snow. Only the children of God sit in the silence, listening, abiding, partaking of the divine blood, the inner Christ. The eternal fire. This is where grace flows. It does not ring bells. It flows silently. It goes before the next 5,000 years preparing a way. Grace becomes the father of all what you will call future activity. Grace grows invisible fruit upon the tree of life. Grace in the silence, living itself as you. And we are now one. There is no second. There is no matter. There are no colors. There are no races. There are no nationalities. There are no religions. There is one invisible Christ. And as we dwell in this silence, we are all joint heirs in Christ to all the heavenly riches. This becomes our daily inner self, lived in. Until Christ liveth our life. Christ is not functioning in a world of life and death where survival is necessary. Christ is functioning as the eternal life now. Touch it within you, within your neighbor, within your enemy. And you'll never be concerned about survival. For you're on the high ground, not in the valley. Here is where we leave all problems outside, all fears, all lacks, all limitations. We live in the one, without opposite. Until identity is firmly established, I am that one, for there is no other. Thanks again.